Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock. I am Johnny Numb, and joining me tonight, as always, is...
Billy Crash?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm, indeed.
And, you know, it's a strange, somber time around the last knock. I'll come right out and say it. We're recording this show on May 2nd, and most people already know this. On April 26th, I had to put my dearly beloved cat of 2 years and 8 months down, the iconic Vice.
Our mascot.
Yep, and she'll remain the show mascot.
Damn straight.
Even in the...
Absentia.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, I was talking to Bill about it, and, you know, Billy, as he's so good at doing, is very understanding and helpful and supportive. And before it turns into a big love-in here, you know, it's just, it's really, you know, just death in general as a concept is just very
sobering.
Sobering. There's a lot of emotions that go along with it. You know, people still obviously, you know, question the existence of, is there an afterlife? You know, is there some spirit world where we go to? You know, depending on which school of thought you buy into, you might, you know, believe in reincarnation or something like that. So it just prompted a bunch of thoughts, and I guess what we're going to do tonight is kind of a free-form discussion about just death as a concept. I might have some things to say in relation to personal experience, and I know you will too, Bill.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, and possibly tying it into some films and the depictions of death and how, you know, they resonate with us in certain instances.
Yes, and in horror, and with horror fans in general. I mean, I think that's one of the things we're going to focus. Now, some people brought up in the past. I haven't been able to find any specific articles, but you know, coping with death may help. Oh my gosh, horror fans may enjoy horror films because it might help them cope with death by getting over the anxiety of it. So,
well, and I think there's that the element of catharsis that we often mention, you know, with horror that you don't really get in other genres, you know. And I think even David Cronenberg said something along the lines of, you know, I take death very seriously in my films because whenever I kill someone in a movie, it's like it's like a rehearsal for my own death in a way.
Wow, man, that's heavy shit, man. That's like,
I mean, but if you look at his movies, you can see he sticks to that mantra kind of because it's granted, in a lot of his movies, the death is kind of brought about by really uncanny circumstances, like very out there circumstances sometimes, right. But at the same time, I think he presents stuff, even something like The Fly, I think he presents the notion of death in that as just very, very final, very, you know, very, very sad and upsetting in its own way. There, he finds the tragedy in things. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, that's a mad scientist movie, so to speak. Well, it is, but, it's on a more serious tone and this slow degradation of, you know, loss of self, loss of humanity, and then loss of life. It's just what a man once was and now what he is or isn't, you know, in the end is quite horrible.
Yeah, you know, is there still that shred of humanity in there? And you know, Bill, maybe I'll back it up a bit here.
Yeah.
You know, we'll both have our stories about this, but what was your first encounter with death? Was it a loved one? Was it a pet? What, you know, how far does it go back, and how do you remember how you felt when you first had your brush with, you know?
Yeah, brush
mortality.
With, with mortality. I remember my grandmother's funeral on the Ukrainian side, and it was just, I was really young. I forgot how old, 7, 8. And it was just really, it was a surreal thing. You know, I knew it was around Christmas time. And my dad was somber, and my mom said, you know, he lost his mom. And I'm still trying to figure that crap out, you know, like, or, what does that really mean? And, you know, and I saw her in the casket, and it was just weird because I knew that wasn't her, you know. And then I remember getting sick like crazy because they had a, they had all this food out, and I love, and I just had them too right now. Love black olives, and I was, and no one was looking. All the adults are talking and stuff. So I just like, I remember I counted them. I ate like 22 black olives in like 2 seconds, and summarily threw up everywhere. But yeah, I really couldn't, you know, get in tune to it. And I, but I do remember shortly thereafter, a puppy was crossing the street and was hit by a car. And I remember a gentleman running down the street to pick up the dog. The dog was gone. The blood was pouring out of its mouth and flooding, going down the street. And all these little kids are outside. And he just like me. I never saw him before. I don't remember who this guy was, but he just did, you know, he wanted to scoop that puppy up as much as possible. And that left a big impression on me because something was suddenly alive and now it's suddenly gone. And that, that freaked me out. And, so as like a little kid, every time I heard a fire engine, I would cry, you know, cause I used to see like firemen as like people who would rescue, you know, oh, they're going to, every time you hear a fireman, they're going to put out the fire and rescue everybody. And I started to realize they're not, they can't rescue everybody. You know, sometimes they get there too late or they can't get to them or in it. And then I just started to realize that, you know, life isn't necessarily like rainbows and unicorns, you know?
Yeah. And so the guy on the street, Bill, he was just trying to console the animal because he knew it was going to die, basically.
Well, no, the animal was gone. It was dead. Oh, okay. But he wanted to scoop it up and get it out of there real quick. And I think somebody came out and poured water, a bucket of water on the blood to, you know,
to put it, get it in the drain or whatever.
Yeah. So kids could play in the street again and not freak out.
Okay. Yeah.
What about you, man?
Well, you know, we always, you know, ever since I was a kid, we'd had cats at our house. And I, you know, I remember one time it wasn't a brush with death, but we had gone to my grandparents on my dad's side, and we had a bunch. It was like a mama cat, and she had a litter, and we took them all in, basically. And for whatever reason, we were spending, I don't know if we were spending the night or spending the weekend at my grandparents' house. And they lived on a big sprawling farm, basically, with a, you know, there was like a, you know, a road that went by it, but it was a huge, you know, huge acreage. And we'd brought the cats along with us, and I was like too small to really remember much of the details, but I know some of the cats got loose and they just bolted and we never saw them again, basically. So, you know, I don't know if they just wound up becoming barn cats or what happened with that, but really my first human experience with mortality was my grandmother on my mom's side. And she was a, you know, she was a very large woman, and I just remembered she had to go into the hospital at one point because she had congestive heart failure and they had to do open heart surgery on her. So she was admitted and she was in the hospital for a couple of days. And the reason I remember this is because I was like staying up at night, like crying before I was able to fall asleep over the whole thing, because it was bizarre because the relationship with I had with both sets of my grandparents was, I wouldn't really classify it as particularly close. They lived about, you know, 45, 50 minutes away from us at any given point in my childhood. So it was like we would go out like every Sunday and visit, but it wasn't like, oh, you know, I'm just walking around the block and we're going to hang out with, you know, grandpa and grandma kind of thing. It wasn't like the kids in my, you know, school class who, you know, they hung out all the time because their grandparents were like in the area. But I don't know if it was just the factor of this unknown question mark kind of thing. Like it was the first time someone I knew, someone who was part of the family came down with a condition that seemed, I didn't know what, I didn't know what congestive heart failure was or, what open heart surgery entailed, but I knew it was not good, in most cases, if you had to, if you had to do something like that. So after a couple of days, I guess it was probably after the surgery was done, she did pass away. And it was tough. And I was a little older than you. I was probably around 9 or 10. So yeah, it was strange. And you had your black olive story. I just remember it being so surreal, like at the funeral home and everything, and everybody coming up offering, I mean, not to me, but offering their condolences. And you look in when the casket's open, you look at the person inside the casket. And were did you say something, Bill? Like it wasn't that person anymore, or
Yeah, that's what I felt like. It wasn't her anymore because she wasn't in that body. She was gone.
right? And I probably didn't. I probably wasn't able to process it as that at the time, but I think I was having a similar reaction. It's like you're looking at a separate, some like a separate entity kind of that's being, it's going to be put down.
As far as humans think, some humans think, if you're an atheist, you don't, or a Buddhist, there's no soul, and I would have been a Buddhist a long time ago if they allowed for that, Can you have like a can you include like the soul in there, maybe? Like, give me some hope that there's something after all this shit, but the funny thing was, like, I had seen other people pass on after my grandmother over the years, but it wasn't until I was 22 years old when we had to put our puppy down. Ms. Nova Minx, my mom named her. She was a beagle poodle mix, absolutely phenomenal, phenomenal puppy. If I took too long to get up in the morning, like, she would, like, she would. I had these doors that closed, and like they would lock with like a little magnet, and she would like just jump on a door and open them up and come in and like, okay, Nova, I know it's time to wake up, and she would howl, like for a carrot, you want a carrot, like she was just awesome, and we had to put her down, man, I never cried so much in my friggin' life until my father passed away, and then later on my mom, and still to this day, like, I just watched It Comes at Night last night, and there's a dog in it, and it's like, oh, fuck me, because it's like, I don't care, kill the entire family, leave the dog alone, and it's like, okay, I have issues, it's like, but I know I'm not the only one. I talked to a lot of horror fans. It's like, there's even memes going around, touch anybody you want, but leave the dog alone, kind of thing, and I'm still connected in that way. Animals are just, because they're just, there's a purity to them, and I think we were talking about that a little bit on our last show with the ruins. There's a purity to animals and such, but and then, yeah, I think we spend an entire lifetime trying to process what death is, because we know that's the one thing we can't escape, and we don't know what comes afterward, if anything. And it's like, it's funny because I remember when I was teaching, what we tell students, the number two fear in the world is death. Number one is public speaking. So people still have more, and that's been documented, where people are like, they'd rather, so it's like, okay, we're doing pretty good with maybe coping with this death thing, but still, it's hard to contemplate. But when you watch a horror movie, you're how many, I was trying to think of horror movies where someone doesn't die in it, and it's usually not the case. Usually somebody doesn't make it. It's like, it's just part of the, it's part of the, it's like maybe the number one trope. Someone's gonna die. It's like, it's like,
Well, that's a good point. Now that you bring that up, I don't know that I could point to one just offhandedly either. I'm sure there has been something that's.
I don't know, because usually, even if a good person doesn't pass in it, it's usually a bad person who does. You know what I mean? The antagonist doesn't make it somehow, gets it in the end, and
Yeah, I think it's almost like just the structure of like film in general. It's like you almost like what is it? The inciting incident,
yeah.
the conflict, and usually the conflicts manifest in like a some environmental incident, or it's person versus person or person versus thing kind of.
Yeah, and then when I'm 12 years old, I go to this movie theater to watch this movie called Star Wars that I heard that I couldn't wait to see because of these awesome trailers. And then, Grand Moff Tarkin, played by the awesome Peter Cushing, launches in a one blast assault from the Death Star on Alderaan, and I'm like, he like killed an entire planet. I'm like, holy shit! Like every horror movie I've watched can't even come close to that. It's like.
That is one evil dude.
Oh yeah, he was just cool and calm. Like, hey, it works. It was like, oh my
Yeah, George Lucas was foreshadowing all the nice toys we have today that can, wipe out people from afar as well. So,
Yeah, absolutely. But
Bill, to what you were saying about the puppy you had, I mean, with Vice, it's actually the third time in my lifetime that I've had to or was part of the decision to put a cat down.
Oh man.
And I remember the first time we had to do it was me and my dad, and we took the cat to the vet, and I think we literally just dropped him off, and we both I remember both of us just kind of fleeing the vet's office like we were both blubbering and crying about what we'd what just happened, and I think it was just that whole mess of confusion over over how we were feeling, and we had to do that, just might have been 5 years ago that we had to do to another one of the cats we had, and it was a quality of life issue for him, and it's I think that's the difficult thing is that it's just a horrible spot to be in because you have to determine, well, the animal can't express, what it's feeling to you. It can't verbal, it can make noise like it's in pain or whatever, but with cats, they're notorious for like hiding pain and covering up illness. So, it's like, well, they seem fine on the outside, but really if things are collapsing on the inside, it's just a really it's a spot that sucks so much because if you could somehow translate what the animal was thinking or saying, maybe you'd have a better notion about it.
Gauge, yeah.
How to proceed, but you're just kind of left with that there's so many kind of unknowns and so many factors, and I mean those things played into the decision I made for Vice just recently, and it was awful. I was crying like a baby in the emergency vet's office over even before that came up, that the talk kind of came up. It was just I just It's like part of me was like, I don't want to do this,
Of
but
course not.
maybe I have to, maybe it's what's best. And then there's the financial aspect, which you feel awful for even thinking about because it's like you're putting a dollar amount on a life, and it's just I think part of the reason it's so sad is just because there's so many unknowns, and you just kind of have to do the you kind of have to ballpark it, as the saying goes. It's and it sucks.
Oh yeah, it does. And it wouldn't if we would if we knew what happened afterwards. And some people who are you know, I know some atheists who would just say, well, nothing. You know, it's like, you know, it's like, oh my God.
Right,
and,
right.
And of course we hope, you know, most of us hope that there's something afterward, but we don't know. We don't know what comes after. I hope it's make your own heaven, you know, like, Bill, here's the holodeck. You could have the BDSM horror-filled mansion all you want. Yay! You know, and I'm like, dude, I'll be fucking doing backflips and fucking whatever comes next. But for all I know, I'm just going to be worm food and, you know, and that's it. I don't know. But, and that's why I like Mark Twain. I should find, you know, I should find the quote before I butcher it. But, Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens, one of America's greatest thinkers and writers, had this excellent quote of on death, and I'm hoping I could find it. Oh, not that one. Oh, boy. Yeah, man. When you hit the wrong button, man, you get, like, weird shit. Well, he had a lot of, you know, one of his quotes was, the fear of death follows from the fear of life. A man who lives fully is prepared to die at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we could say a woman too. Where is the one? Oh yeah, this is my favorite, and this is the one that actually helped get me through a lot. I do not fear death. I had been dead for billions and billions of years before I was born, and had not suffered the slightest inconvenience from it.
Yeah,
and maybe that's like the best way, you know, to just approach it. And he lived a long, full life, man. You know, he just, you know, he even made it on a film before he died. And I remember him looking at the camera like, whatever. You know, he was like a punk rocker before he was, you know, it was even a notion.
Oh, you have this new innovative medium you want to put me on? Whatever.
Yeah. Whatever. Give me my cigar and leave me the hell alone. You know.
Put a cat on my shoulder and give me a cigar. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, and you know, part of the thing too is like when someone's, you know, an animal companion's near their demise, it's like our goal is, as people who love this other life, is to help it, to save it, not to destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at it as destruction when, you know, sometimes maybe we should look at it as a release. I know they have the death pill, and I know there's like doctor assisted suicides allowed in Oregon. And mm-hmm. I remember one woman, she had brain cancer, and, you know, there was a lot of controversy because she took the pill, and you have to take it yourself because if somebody else gives you the pill, it's actually murder.
Okay.
And I remember reading about a woman who did that in Canada too. She sat next to her husband on a field, on a hill over, you know, overlooking things. And she took the pill. He couldn't, you know, do it for her because he'd be a murderer.
Mm.
And, which is, it's so bizarre. You know, people do it, you know, there was no hope for either of these, women, and the, pain was only going to, you know, keep coming and getting worse. Strain on family, friends, loved ones in general, financial strain. Mm-hmm. I remember the woman from Canada, because I wrote to both families, and they both responded, which was very nice, because obviously they didn't have to and they didn't expect it, but they really appreciated the support because they had a lot of people coming down on them for this. But the one woman said, she said, you know, I don't want to burden my country because they have to pay for me. You know, people have to pay for me to keep me alive when it's not going to be, like you said before, quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because the one horror movie that keeps coming to mind is one of my favorites. And it's very disturbing in this regard, is the movie Sublime.
Okay.
Did you see that?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
go ahead. Yeah, I'm curious now. Yeah.
It's about a gentleman who... goes into the hospital for a minor procedure that turns into anything but. Things go wrong, horribly wrong. And it's about him fighting his way back to understanding where he... Oh my gosh, this movie's 11 years old now. Oh my Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Cavanaugh stars in it, and it is his greatest performance, and it's an excellent film. I gave it 4.5 out of 5 stars. And, yeah, it's for his 40th birthday. he goes to a hospital for a routine procedure, colonoscopy, and everything goes bad. And it's really intriguing what happens to him in his mind, what happens to his family. And it's a very sobering film. It's I think it's, you know, one of the saddest horror films I've ever seen, but it's also extremely surreal, and it's a mind trip. But yeah, anytime I think of hospitals and people passing away, my father died in a hospital, my mom died at home. But every time it comes to a hospital, I always think of Sublime, and it's like, ooh, you know, it's like, you know, oh man, poor Tom Cavanaugh, man, you know what he went through. But
that's interesting, because I think Tom Cavanaugh, he was on that TV show Ed, so that, and that was like a comedy years ago.
Exactly. In fact, this, he did this, I think, around the time he was doing Ed.
Okay.
And, I have no idea what the hell he's doing now, but I'm gonna find out right this moment. Yeah, because he was on Scrubs too. I remember that. You know, he's on The Flash now. It was Dr. Harry Wells.
Oh, okay. All right.
But yeah, that was. That was a pretty potent film, man. 2007, and he was doing... Man, he's been a lot of shit, man. Yeah, Ed had ended in 2004, but...
Yeah, I was actually...
It's not a funny movie, man. It's not a comedy at all.
Well, I was actually, when you started talking about it, I was like, is that the movie with the guy from Ed? And I was like, okay, yeah, it is.
Okay.
And I remember the cover art for the film is kind of interesting, because it almost looks like...
Yeah.
I was under the impression that it was kind of like this weird like tattoo kind of like thing going on, because it's like a person's backside that's all carved up with some sort of
with
some sort of design, if I'm remembering right. Yeah.
Yeah, it is, and it is an interesting movie poster, because it's a person holding a pair of surgical scissors behind their back, and it's stabbing up into them, and there are like. Seemingly tattoo marks on it. And it's interesting because when you look at it closely, you're like, okay, what the hell's going on? And that's like, because it's not okay, this isn't a slasher film, maybe, I don't know, but but yeah, it's a real potent film, man.
I gotta check that out for sure.
Tony Krantz directed it, and Eric Gendrison wrote it, and they both crushed it. They were just, it was really excellent work.
You know what, Bill? Since I was talking about the cats, I gotta say, I think the reason this movie keeps gaining power with me, and it's a bit of an obvious choice, Pet Sematary.
Oh man, yeah.
Just because I think it does deal really, it deals really frankly with the notions of death and dying. You know, it explores it from the human angle, like a human mourning a human. And a human mourning a pet, and obviously the gray cat that the family owns is what sort of sets everything in motion with the plot. And it's kind of sad because the cat we had to euthanize prior to Vice was actually a gray cat that looked like Church from Pet Sematary.
Oh man,
you know, and it's like I think the movie gets more interesting. And even the book, I haven't read the book in years, but the book goes into more detail. But just the fact that, well, you know, the father buries the cat because he doesn't want the daughter, you know, his young daughter, to find out and have to have that hard talk about, you know, he doesn't think she can handle it, you know, if she comes back from vacation and finds, you know, finds out her cat's been hit. Yeah. And when the cat comes back, the cat stinks, the cat's pissed off, the cat's standoffish, causing damage, floating around like a ghost, because at one point the father's in the bathroom getting ready to take a bath, and the cat just jumps up out of nowhere, and he's like, how the hell did you get in here?
Yep.
You know, it's like, okay, well, it's not really a cat anymore, so maybe it's practicing astral projection or something like that.
It's not really your son anymore either, you know.
Exactly. You know, it's not your pet dog that you love so much. You know, it's, I think that's an interesting vantage point to take, kind of, you know, instead of like, oh, it's this harmonious reunion. It's like, you know what?
It's the monkey's paw made real.
Kind of, and so like you wonder to yourself, and it made me think, Bill, well, how would we feel if, like you said, the afterlife is you getting strung up and whipped and getting all sorts of pleasure, you know, If someone buried you in the Indian burial ground and you came back, you'd probably be pissed if you'd be pulled away from all that good stuff.
Yeah, and that's what I loved when, to look at another horror element, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the TV show, when Buffy comes back, and I'm like, I hate that. I hate when they bring a character back. And the thing is, she's pissed. She comes back, and it's not like the normal. She's upset with all of her friends. They brought her back, and she was like, I was happy. And it was like, oh, And no, but I love that. And, with the whole monkey's paw angle in the movie from a couple of years ago was actually really was far better than expected. But the movie called, They Came Back, or the Monk, or the Revenants is a French film from 2004, which explores this as well, where the dead return. And in the movie, this one couple's so happy their dead son came back, and after a while, they're like, "How do we get rid of him?" And it was a really cool movie about be careful what you wish for, because especially when you don't know. When you don't know what's on the other side or whatever. Who knows? For all, maybe you're reborn as a, like, I think sometimes when I see a happy puppy or kitten, I'm like, in a previous life they were a human and this is their reward now,
You know what, Bill? If reincarnation were a thing, I would love to be reincarnated as a cat in a really nice house, Yeah, a loving, caring household. I'd take that as an afterlife.
Oh yeah, man. Sleep 18 hours out of the day, like
One of nine afterlives, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, but Bill, that brings up a good point. There's sort of this paradox that, you're talking about with They Came Back, and then even with Pet Sematary, there's this degree, like with Pet Sematary, there's kind of this hubris
Yes.
slash selfishness in a way.
Of
It's
course.
the father wants to, shield the daughter from that hard conversation he doesn't want to have, that he thinks she's not mature enough to handle, even though, the way they talk, it's obviously she's very thoughtful and very mature about things. And then it's like that thing, how much of it is just like, well, I'm doing this for me. I'm not actually doing it for the person in question, kind of, or the animal in question. It's more a matter of selfishness. And I think that kind of also puts things into perspective when you have to make that decision whether to, hang on to and nurse an ailing pet, or to, just release it from the earthly bonds of pain, basically.
Yeah,
So.
exactly. And you just reminded me of a great article from the New Yorker a few years ago, and it was, I believe, entitled "What Happens When Doctors When Doctors Get Cancer." And the overwhelming element from this entire article was when they find out they have cancer, they quit and they go home to die. They're like, I'm
Wow.
not doing chemo. Most of them don't because they know, because they're like, that's poisoning my body and wearing my body down and all of that nightmare. It's over
Wow.
for me, so I'm just going to enjoy what days I have left and go home. That was the crux of the article. And it was very, on the one hand, it was disconcerting. But on the other hand, it gave rise to like, well, why do we go nuts with, chemo, which is a pure poison? It's funny, you're injecting poison in your body to kill something, and hopefully that poison you're injecting won't kill you at the same time. But the thing is, doctors, and I can't imagine being a doctor when it's like they know, like, all right, this person's got like a few months left, and the family's begging and pleading that they want more life, and that's the battle cry, and you have to meet the family's needs. And like, I can't imagine, dealing with that nightmare as a doctor. I remember before my father passed away, the surgeons, this was 98, and oh, I can't believe it, 20 years. My father's been dead fucking 20 damn years.
Wow.
It's insane. Wow. But, I remember in the hospital that one surgeon met with us, and he said that he had spoken to other surgeons about what my father needed, and they said, whatever we do, he's not going to make it off the table, and we don't want his death on our hands. And I understood that, and I know my brother is still upset that they didn't at least try, but I get it. I get it because I've He was in the cardiac intensive care unit at St. Joseph's Hospital in Paterson, New Jersey, an excellent hospital, and it was an excellent unit, and the people were great. And when my father did pass away and we walked in, the entire staff, I mean, the entire staff was in mourning.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that for every patient, because most of the patients in there, a lot of them, it's like, and I knew what I was going into long before. I was like, I'm on death watch.
Yeah.
And that was it, you know. And, you know, my father passed away with my brother in the room. I was going to be there the following evening. But, you know, and I'm like, how can you do that? You know, these care workers, the suffering that they endure. I've seen so many shows, Trauma, Life in the ER and everything else, where they're working their asses off to save somebody who came into the emergency room. Mm-hmm. And they can't, they got to call it. And I mean, these doctors are fucking pissed because they're not, they want to save. You know, they want to help, you know, they want to ease pain. They want to save lives. They mm-hmm. they don't want to go out and tell a family that, you know, we did everything we could and, you know, your son didn't make it or your daughter, or your dad, whatever.
Right.
And they're pissed. They're sad. And they have to cope with that nightmare, that horror perpetually.
Mm-hmm.
It's just horrible. And I think we put a lot of pressure in this country anyway, with the way our system is set up, a lot of pressure on, you know, medical professionals to keep doing all you can,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's why, you know, everybody should have like a living will.
Right.
You know, so it's like, okay, yeah, but you're, you know, and we would, even with my mom, we went with her wishes and one of the top, oh man, you know, and I know I'm long-winded and I apologize.
No, it's okay, Bill. Keep going.
With my mother, I remember there was a point where she couldn't, with her Parkinson's, and that is no way to see somebody pass away. Mm-hmm. Really horrible. You know, at one point, the one visiting nurse said, or a doctor actually came. I can't even recall at this point because we went through so much. But the question was posed to us, well, we could give your mother a feeding tube. And we all like looked at each other and we said, no, she wouldn't want that. And, you know, we don't want that for her. And then, but we all at the same instant realized now we're starving our mother to death.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just fucking, my gut just twisted just bringing it up again.
That paradox, yeah.
Yeah. And, well, even with my father, and this was the coolest thing in the world, because I told my mom, I said, you know, dad isn't coming back when they start giving him morphine and they mm-hmm. keep him on it. And she called me, he's on morphine. And I drove 100 miles an hour from work to my mom to pick her up and take her to the hospital. And it's a drive that would usually take, like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes for me. And I did it in like 7. It was insane what I was doing in that car. Mm-hmm. But, so luckily I didn't get killed. And, you know, I got there. And I remember one day I'm sitting there with my dad. He's unconscious at this point, and everybody's waiting. And, I'm playing a handheld game that my dad had, a poker game. And this nurse walked in. She looked at my father. She looked at the morphine. And she went up to the dial and cranked it and walked out. And I was thankful. And the thing is, you know, everybody talks about, you know, doctors assisted suicide. It's against their oath, blah, 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 this and that. Whenever they can, medical health professionals help the person along. You know, because I've heard, this isn't the first time I've heard of anything like that, you know, happening. And I was most grateful. And it was just weird. But and it sucks. And I thought after my father died, I'd know what to tell people after when someone suffered loss. And like you with your beautiful kitten. And I still have no fucking words, man. I still don't know what to say.
Well, you know what? I appreciate that all the same, Bill. Just because, you know, I wanted to tell a couple people, like, because I know you're the one I talked to the night I took her to the emergency mm-hmm. vet, because we were going to record a show that night and she was just acting all strange, and I called you and said, she's acting weird. Can I take her? And you were like, of course. Yeah,
I was like, get the hell out of here, man. Don't, you know, go.
Yeah, but you know. Yeah, you know, Bill, to your story about your dad and, you know, even your mom, I lost my mom when I was 19. Mm. And, you know, it's really weird because I think sometimes Watching a lot of movies, I don't think is a bad thing. I'll never say that's a bad thing, but sometimes you watch movies and your young impressionable mind takes certain things a bit,
Oh, of course, yeah.
maybe a bit too much to heart, because she was diagnosed with cancer when I was in my late, probably when I was like 16 or so. So she had it for a couple of years. And she was definitely fighting her way through it, doing the chemo. She lost her hair, wore a wig, and all that stuff, but she kept going to work every day for as long as she could. Kept making meals around the house, even though my dad would start helping out with that. And then there's just this one day where it was like a Sunday afternoon, I remember, where she was like laying on the couch and, wasn't thinking anything of it. Like she, was like she nodded off, but a couple hours later, it's like, is my I think my dad was like, is your mom responding or anything like that? I think he was trying to get her attention, and she wasn't responding, which led to a whole thing of calling an ambulance and getting her to the hospital. And she was pretty much kind of in a non-responsive state for like a week before she passed away. I came by to visit each day, but it was really strange, I guess, because there was I could talk at her but not to her.
Yeah, and you don't know if they're, you don't know if they can hear you or not.
All that sort of thing. And it was really, there was this notion in my head, like, while she, after she first got diagnosed, it's like, oh, she's strong, she'll be okay, it'll be one of those stories like in the movies where she comes out the other side stronger than ever. It's like, oh, cancer's going into remission and all is well, and roll credits kind of crap. And yeah, that was it was a really tough pill to swallow when she passed on. There was this just total sense of panic in me as to what was going to happen
Happen, yeah.
around the house, and just like, without her, because she was like, I just had come to view her as such an integral part of everything. She kind of was everything. She did so much, and what would we be without her, kind of, left behind. And I gotta tie this into a movie, Bill, because it's a
Do it.
movie when I don't watch it often, for a couple reasons, but one of the reasons is I think it has one of the most saddeningly accurate depictions of someone who is going through that. And it is a horror movie. It's Simon Rumley's Red, White, and Blue,
Oh, fucking A, man.
which really takes the notion of just suburbia, kind of the mundanity of suburbia, and kind of brings the human horror element out of that. But the one character is named Frankie, and he's like this good kid. He's got a band, but and he's looking after his mom, who's essentially dying. She's getting treatments for cancer. She's got the shaved head and everything like that, and she's on a regimen of medications. And it's obvious the two of these two really care a lot for each other. And Frankie's trying to do as much as he can for her, and a series of unfortunate events, makes things take a really bad turn for the two of them, actually. But just the way Rumley photographs, like, just she's like the way she lies in bed, the way, the meds by the on the bedside table and
Oh,
everything,
yeah. Oh, man, yeah.
and just that sense of like, emaciation and deterioration of the body. And kind of that was that just felt very real to me. So I mean, that's one reason why I own the movie, but it's a tough watch.
Oh,
And
that movie's a tough watch on so many levels, man.
yeah, I know. I mean, that's just one portion of why it's tough, and that's because I'm bringing my own, someone who hasn't gone through that with a loved one might react to that a bit differently. But I think it's presented in such a way that even if you don't have that bit of personal experience, like, Rumley really makes it feel personal. So
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that whole movie is like a punch to the stomach, man. And
Oh, it is.
yeah, tough. That's one of the most disturbing films ever fucking made, man.
Yeah,
Sorry, I just had to say it like that because it really is. It
no, it's okay, Bill. It is, yeah.
really is. Yeah. Man.
Well, did you talk about your mom at all, Bill, or you talked about your dad?
Yeah, my mom, she'd been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, which is a close relative to Alzheimer's. And near the end, I was happy because she was delusional, which I thought was good because she didn't really know what was going on. Her one caretaker, a sweetheart of a woman, from Ghana, she had two, one from Ghana and one from the Georgian Republic, who were taking care of her. And they were both wonderful women, and the one from Ghana, she was a very spiritual person, and my mom kept hearing, like she said, "Would someone stop the baby from running around? There's no baby, you know." And when she would sleep, she'd like tell your father to take his feet out of my back, you know, and other things, and so some would think is delusional, this very spiritual caretaker was like, "Your mother's between worlds right now. She's between meeting your father on the other side and, and everything else." And whether you believe it or not, that's pretty fucking reassuring, when you're watching,
Oh, yeah.
your mother like slowly go day by day and there's nothing you could do. And I remember I was teaching that semester and my mom really, this is when she really like started to die in January, and she didn't pass on until like the last week of classes in early May. And it was like, ugh. And when students found out, because I had to miss a day for her funeral, they were like, "We never knew." And I was like, but I'm like, oh, I'm glad, because I didn't want anyone, I didn't want to infringe upon their learning. And it was good to hear that, but man, it was just every day the stress was through the roof, it was just insane because like, what do you do? What can you do? You want to see your mom as much as possible, and teaching responsibilities and all this other real life crap, and it was just, it's just so draining. And when you were talking about like the medications on the side of the bed, we couldn't do that because my mom had so many fucking medications.
Oh,
We had a
jeez.
spreadsheet of stuff, and it reached a point where it's like, well, what the fuck are we doing, man? Like, why are we like, there's no, she's at that point. There's no turning point. She's not going to get better. There's no cure for Parkinson's. This sucks. Why are we giving her this crap? Can we give her something that will like not only ease pain but keep her out of it, so she doesn't have to go through this transition with, while being aware of it, I think that was the thing that bothered me the most, because she was such a strong woman, and Parkinson's is just really debilitating. It's just really horrible. During that semester, it was actually funny, and I actually laughed because I knew if I had been a dick and said something to this poor student, they would have felt awful for eternity. But the students, I forgot, he had to sign a document, and he handed it to me. He's like, "Yeah, look how bad my signature is. I write like somebody with Parkinson's." And he was a comedian, and we both like laughed, and I like sort of needed it. But if I had told him, "My mom's dying of Parkinson's," he would have just, and you know how people are, they'll do that. They'll like jump down somebody's throat, like as if they could get into your brain and know what not to talk about,
Bill, I've seen this. I've witnessed, stuff like that. People do that, and it's really awkward.
Yeah, it's awkward, and it's like, okay, I get the emotional thing, but don't bite somebody's head off because they don't know what's going on in your life right now,
Well, I'm sure, I know you had a good support system too, Bill, of people who, from all over who are probably, helping you through this,
It was tough. It was really tough on the family, and we're still recovering from it. I mean, that was 2013. We're still in slow recovery over the strain that it put us all through and how we all reacted to that strain, and not pleasant.
It's
And I think that's why I think when it comes to horror movies, one of the most popular subgenres is the ghost story. you know, because it's like we want that idea that they're in a better place. Like, if we could prove that ghosts exist, then we could prove that there's life after death, right?
Sure.
So I think that's why I have so many paranormal investigators. I'm sure a lot of people would say, dude, we have enough evidence to prove that. And I get it, but
Well, you know, Bill, the catalyst of the Legend of Hell House is this mm-hmm. wealthy old man. He wants proof of the afterlife because he wants to know if, you know, he wants proof because he's gonna die soon. So,
and that movie is friggin' brilliant, and that's one of my go-to horror movies too. I watch that quite often. Mm-hmm. Totally highly recommended for everyone. And yeah, you know, that's, can you prove it? Even in Faces of Death, like the first one, they were trying to prove that, like,
you know, really?
Yeah, like at the end, the last segment was after this horror show for real, or mm-hmm. reenactment, whatever the hell it was.
Well, all the chickens were killed for real, but you know, everything else was, well, I forget if there was more animal snuff in there, but all the human stuff was fake. Yeah.
But they had, at the end, you know, this story that, there was a ghost in the house or something like that. And I remember the guy was, like, spreading powder on the floors to, like, you know, see if a ghost would walk. And, hey, there's footprints the next day. There's your proof. And it's like, no, it's like, you know, finding footprints in the friggin' snow and saying the Yeti exists. It's like, okay, was anybody running through here with fake feet? I mean, I don't know, you know, so.
Yeah.
But I think we all look for that, you know, because we want some sort of signal. I remember after my dad died, the front doorbell rang in the house, and the front doorbell was broken. And I remember I forgot who went to the door, but the way that it was situated, if somebody were to ring that doorbell and run, you would see them running away, and there was nobody on the street. So it's like, was that it? And I remember the living room lights were on in the morning, and throughout our entire existence with my dad in that house, they had these two chandeliers in the living room, and if you put them on, you'd be like, why is that light on? Keep it off, you know, save electricity. So it was almost like decorative, like lighting.
Yeah.
You know how parents are, you know?
Of course,
But we wake up in the morning and the lights are on, and it's like, ooh, was that a sign from dad?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I remember one woman died in the house that we rented, we lived in. She was like my real grandmother, Mrs. Sadie Rich. And when she passed away, it was like a couple weeks later, she would always come down the stairs from upstairs from her apartment. And, you know, she'd call out to one of us, my brother Mark or me. And I remember hearing, Billy. And I was like, be right there, Mrs. Rich. And I'm running back through the house to get to her. And I'm like, she's dead. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, my brother had the same experience. So was it her voice from beyond? Were both my brother and I delirious? Did we have some mushrooms that we didn't know about? You know, I don't know. We were little kids. I mean, like, I wouldn't make that crap up. But so I don't know. I don't have any answers. But I know we would all feel a lot better if we did.
You know, Bill, I got to mention a recent movie, and I've watched a bunch of times at this point. But, and we've talked about it before, but I just gotta say it, because
I think it really
affectionately, or I don't know if it's affectionately or just effectively, encompasses feelings of loss and grief and something not being what you expect it to be or what you want it to be. And that's It. When there are two scenes that seriously almost kind of sort of make me cry each time I watch it. Mm-hmm. And the first scene is like at the very beginning when Georgie is talking to Pennywise in the sewer.
Yeah.
You know, Georgie's this little kid and he's confiding all of these like personal details to this inquisitive clown who's in the gutter. But you know, the moment where he's like saying, you know, I have three friends, but my brother's my best, that's really affecting right there, because sure. we've seen him interacting with his brother prior to him going outside, and it's obviously, you know, like you mentioned on the show, that they have a lot of affection for each other. And then there's that moment that brings it full circle at the very end, where they're down in the storm drain, and you know, Georgie appears missing one arm because, you know, and the acting in that scene, it just, it just gets to me so much because Bill is there like crying his eyes out, and George, you know, he knows that this is not his brother, but he wants so badly to believe that this is his brother. And just the way Georgie is all like he's desiring just this stuff that any kid would want. It's like, oh, I got lost. I just wanted the boat back. I want to go home with you and mom, and you know, I want to go back
I
home
know.
with you and mom and dad. And it's just like
It's the epitome of evil in this movie. It really
yeah,
is.
it's so malicious, and it's so like, yeah, it's absolutely, it's totally predatory in the way that, you know, our emotions and our subconscious, you know, our consciousness is not always rational in times, you know, of when we're
Of
faced,
stress.
yeah, exactly, when we're being faced with mortality or death, you know, that's why it's like a ping pong ball of feelings. It's like, God, it's like, when's it gonna, you know, when's this all going to settle, you know? And I think sometimes I think the best we can hope for is just that it can get a little easier, you know, with, you know, you might cry a little less each passing day, and maybe you'll get to a point where it's like, you know you'll look back and it'll be okay, you know, that those feelings will still be there, but you know, I don't know what the word it's I don't know if the word is acceptance, you know.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's like it's not something, you overcome. I can't say that I'm over my dad's passing, my mom's passing, Nova or Spartacus and Mopar, who came after her. My mom's puppy, Max, just passed away at 18 and a half. And I remember my sister, every time he would have a problem, she would rush him to the vet and she'd say, is he okay? We don't want him to suffer. Are we, we don't want to be selfish about this. And the doctor was really cool. She really knew the pup, knew Max well. And she was like, no, he's still okay right now. He's okay to take the meds and stuff. He's not suffering, blah, blah, blah. Until they reached that one point where, they did take him in and, he had to be put down. And then they went on vacation for like a month. They totally left their house and went away. Yeah, it's just that whole, I don't know about accepting. I don't know. I think, people who believe that there's a life beyond ours, the reassurance is, well, when I die, I'm going to see everybody again. And that's a hard one to fight. It's a hard one for, even me to say, ah, there's nothing after this life. And that's it. I hope my mom and dad are friggin' having a great time somewhere, you know what I mean? They're in their youth again, they're feeling strong and safe and happy, doing all the crazy stuff they always wanted to do, and just having a damn good time. And when my time comes, I'll see them again, and meet my ancestors and all this crazy crap, play with Nova again and Max, and you know what I mean? It's just.
Yeah, you know, Bill, it's like I'm sure they're hang gliding over the Grand Canyon as we speak. So,
I
you
love it,
know,
man. I love it.
holding each other's hands and sharing a hang glider. You know, and yeah, I'm kind of the same way, Bill. You know, I have a weird mentality where I'm like, I just want there to be an afterlife for the animals who can't, you know, who rely on people more or less to survive. And there are some really shitty, awful people out there who do awful things to animals. And you know, I wish there were, you know, more justice in the world for that sort of thing. But you know, I think about the story of the Rainbow Bridge, which makes me cry even thinking about it. You know, is that that's like, you know, I and someone mentioned it on my Facebook when I made my post about Vice, and I was like, yeah, that's, you know, I want to think of her as the, you know, the animal who was, you know, always very posture perfect. Her eyes were, you know, her eyes were always focused. They weren't distracted. They were always like attentive. She was always talkative, and you know, she walked around like she owned the room, and I love that about her. So,
One cool cat.
yeah.
Oh,
Yeah, certainly.
No, I mean, I don't have any answers, but I love, you know, horror movies that give me an outlet and give us all an outlet. You could find many articles about, you know, why do people watch horror movies and all of that. And this is going to sound very interesting, very strange, but I found a really good article about why people watch horror movies on from Teen Vogue. I know. That people with high anxiety, I'm going to quote the article from, oh, what's this young woman's name? From Brittany McNamara. This came out in October 2016. Oddly enough, she posted this when I was at Shriek Fest
Oh, cool.
with Denise Gossett, and that was awesome. But anyway, she says, for people with anxiety disorder, those, let's see, oops, I'm sorry. Where am I going? My quotes. Anxiety can lead to panic attacks, interrupt your sleep, make you feel nauseous, and interfere with your social life. For a person with anxiety, putting their worries in context while they're in the middle of a panic attack is very tough and sometimes impossible, which those of us who've experienced it know for real. Logic just doesn't want to work. That's why horror movies help. There's an obvious worry, but it's not immediate to the person watching. And that's what, let's see, who is this? Dr. Matthias Klassen told broadly, what'd she say? Here's her quote. This disconnect makes perfect sense. After all, coping with real world situations is sometimes intolerable for people with sensitive nervous systems. Dulling our senses with inexplicable horror and violence just might help a disordered nervous system become more amenable to the everyday crises of life. So you could say, horror fans could maybe say with pride, well, I watch horror movies, so therefore I could handle life better than you.
I watch horror movies, therefore I am sane.
Yes, I could handle death better because I watch horror movies.
You know what, Bill? I think there's a truth to that, though, because we've talked about horror conventions on the show before, and just you go to a horror convention and everybody's fucking cool, everybody's friendly.
Exactly.
You'd think people would be getting slaughtered in these hotels where these conventions are being held if you held to those notions of, oh, horror movies are made by insane people, ooh. I think that quote's right on the fucking money, man.
Yeah, I love it. Me too. That's why I did it. I'm like, wow, I have to quote Teen Vogue today with pride.
You know what, Bill? From what I've heard, they've been doing some actually more hard-hitting reporting than a lot of the grown-up news outlets out there these days. So,
You know, I wouldn't doubt that. And
yeah.
actually, that quote was from Patricia Grisafi, who did an essay for Luna Luna magazine. But it was posted in Teen Vogue by Brittany McNamara. So anybody wants to check that out, please do.
Oh, that's cool, Bill. I'm glad you found that. That's
Me too.
really a good cap to put on the conversation, as much of a cap as I think we can put on this conversation.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, when I watch, you know, horror movies, it just helps me. You know, I mean, if it's a super serious horror movie, it's, you know, difficult. You know, it's like I don't know if I could really cope because normally with a super serious horror movie, I'm like you, I'm thinking back to things that I've lost and whatnot in the past. I'm not
Oh,
necessarily going, you know, I feel better now. But with the crazy stuff I do, with the supernatural stuff, with the, oh, we're going to a plane of hell or whatever, it's like, you know, that's fine, you know, and you joke about it, hoping that, you know, okay, meet our demise or something else afterwards. Maybe we have to take a number like Beetlejuice. I don't know, you know,
yeah.
but,
You know, Bill, I was actually, I was, the ending to Martyrs came to mind, but
Oh, I
it's like,
was thinking of that before too, man.
but the thing is, like Pascal Laugier just kind of he dangles that carrot and then he rips it away from us, which is ingenious, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's totally fitting. Yeah, it's like
Quite.
make you know we don't know what the Madame saw, but or heard, but
Yeah.
draw your own conclusions.
That was such an excellent film, man. Rips your guts out. And I like The Orphanage too. I love that. That's a dramatic horror film that people who don't like horror can watch, and it's phenomenal. I think it is anyway. I think it's one of the greatest horror movies. And definitely one of the greatest, saddest ones ever made. about a woman who loses her son and goes searching for him. And sometimes you might not want to find what you're looking for, you know, one of those deals. But
yeah, and you know, Bill,
very potent.
I was actually thinking in a strange way about the Black Coat's daughter as well.
Yeah, I can't, you know, I can't argue that, man.
Like, stuff that could have been rendered really cheesy and, like, corny in that film was done with such straight seriousness, and I think it's because, you know, Oz Perkins took the concept of mortality really seriously, you know.
Sure.
And just the nature of belief, which really ties into that film as well. Like, what do you believe, and how mm-hmm. much is the power you give to something you believe in what's making you do something, or is it all
sure.
in your head kind of thing? So yeah,
sure. Knowing what Oz went through with the passing of his father, the great Anthony Perkins,
good call. Yeah,
yeah, definitely. And the Black Coat's daughter, I mean, he creates such an atmosphere, man. It is heavy. It's just
mm-hmm.
really heavy. And,
it's as cold as a northeastern winter, that's for sure. Yeah,
damn straight there, Johnny. Damn straight. Oh man. But yeah, so yeah, death and horror, I mean, they go hand in hand. But you know, if we have horror movies around so we could feel maybe a little bit lighter, a little bit better about those we've lost and knowing what's going to eventually happen to us, you know, help us cope a little bit more, I'm all for it, man.
I'm with you on that, Bill. Well said.
All right.
Do you have a... Are we too exhausted for Screamouts tonight?
Hell no. We got to liven it up with a little Screamouts, man.
Excellent. That's damn right, Bill.
And because once we let them know that they... Hey, you're in this show. You know, they're going to listen to it and then they're going to get down with us, so...
Yeah, getting down is much better when you have more people to share it with.
Damn straight, yeah. Misery loves company, right?
Yep.
Here we go. These are wonderful souls that you could find on Twitter. And so please follow them. First one is I Am Gore Blimey.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, totally. Podcaster, Chili Head, Archer's Addict, Eurovision fan, and everyone should be, and lover of weird, campy horror movies. You could follow him on Facebook at Trilogy of Terror. And also go to strangeanddeadly.com. And he is from UK Wales, baby. Got to go to Wales one day.
We got to meet Gore.
Totally. got to meet all these wonderful people. D. Carner, who's that? That's David Carner. He's the Scarescapes man. He's a horror, into horror, filmmaker, writer, director. USC. He was at the USC Film School in the 90s. He's also a contributor to Scream Radio. That's SCRM Radio. He's out of Palm Coast, Florida. Vic DeLeon. Who is he? Vic's Movie Den. A Bronx kid now living in Rochester, New York. He has a wife, kids, and a movie blog. That he does, and it's a damn good one. His reviews are excellent. He's also a Yankees and Giants fan, if you care. maybe you don't. But go to Vic's Movie Den. He's phenomenal, and he won't tell you this, but I'm going to tell you he takes some great photography. 12 Nights of Horror, and you could find them on Twitter as 12 Night Horror. So if you're into horror movies, Halloween, you'll have a scream with him. And also check out the other site, 12 Days of Movies. You won't go wrong. And also check out the website, 12, nightsofhorror.com. The lovely, the vivacious, the fabulous Melanie McCurdy. Mm. What does she do? She slays things. She's an author, an artist, a poet. She supports indie everything. Check her out on Amazon.com for her work. She has a couple of new published pieces up there. And also go to her website, MelanieMcCurdy.com. And this is great. This is probably my favorite bio. Israel_Finn. Bio, here it is. Fiction writer. That's it. And he is. And he's a damn good one because he writes some of the best horror I've read in a long damn time. And you could check out his website, IsraelFinn2Ns.com. Also check him out on Amazon.com. Another wonderful writer in her own right, and more, the fabulous Real Jilly G. She has more work out right now, so check her out. She's a writer, poet. She loves The Walking Dead. She's part of the women's movement. She's an advocate, a survivor, a Scorpio, an influencer. And check out her work on CrimsonQuintessence.com. and she's out of the wonderful Toronto, Canada. Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And again, we just mentioned a minute ago, Scream Radio. Who's the owner? That is Tracy underscore TR. She's fabulous. She's the queen of horror radio. Check them out at scrmradio.com. You will not be disappointed. Kyle D. Hester. What does he do? He makes movies, damn it. He's an actor and a producer, happily married too. And you can follow her on Twitter as well. The Tracy Ray. And his films are Preacher 6 and also The Chair Horror. So check him out. Where is he? In Hollywood, damn it, where he belongs. And you can check him out on imdb.com, of course. And finally, because she's done so much for a show that has met its untimely end, what I consider to be the best show on television, that would be Ash vs. Evil Dead. This is a wonderful soul, Susan on the Ledge, otherwise known as Susan Layton. She's a writer girl. She's a tequila expert. Johnny, we got to go hang out with her.
She wants to, Bill. Yeah,
I know. We got to get together. She is also does great work with 1428 underscore Elm and Nerdrotics. And also TV Series Hub. And
Bill, is it Nerdtronics?
I copied it directly. That's what I thought, too. It says Nerdrotics.
Oh, okay. All right. Never mind. I thought it was Nerdtronics. Never mind.
That's okay. Also follow her on Facebook as Susan Layton, L-E-I-G-H-T-O-N. She is amazing, a great writer. We love the hell out of her. So those are scream outs for tonight, Johnny.
Cool, Bill. Where can people find you in the wild world of the internet?
As Crash Palace on Twitter, Billy Crash on Instagram, and go to CrashPalaceProductions.com for links to this show and more. And please leave your comments. What do you think of death? What do you think of death in horror movies? Does horror movies help you cope?
Got an experience you want to share with the two of us? We've just kind of broken our souls open to talk about stuff. So if you're feeling ambitious,
yeah, share. You're in a welcoming environment.
No pressure, but you know, if you want to.
No pressure. Yeah, only if you want to. But, yeah, Johnny, what about you, my friend?
You can find me on, well, okay, the church bells are ringing.
I hear it, man. I hear it. That's awesome. That's sort of scary, too.
What day is it? It's Christmas Day, sir.
Oh. Sorry, I'm okay now.
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies. And you can also find my writing over at loudgreenbird.com.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Excellent. Johnny, that was an interesting show.
It was interesting. I'm glad we did it.
I'm glad we did, too. We got it out of our system.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's all a good right. thing.
Cool. So next time, more chainsaws, more bloody laughs.
More of the stuff you tune in for each week here at The Last Knock.
Oh, my God. Oh, man.
I'm trying to sell you a car.
Yeah. I was just going to say, get this new mattress. Only one victim was taken by Freddy Krueger on this one. Sorry, go ahead.
Hey, Bill, there's this place in off Paxton Street in Harrisburg. It's like this furniture warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And the name, I believe, it's like the Mattress King or whatever. Yeah. But they're saying, and they have it posted on a flatbed truck facing the street, is our prices are Sofa King Low. I think we need to get them to sponsor the show, Bill.
Holy yeah. shit, yeah. Talk to them tomorrow. Dude, that's gold, baby.
I never get tired of it, no matter how many times I pass by there. Yeah.
Oh my God. They know the English language. I love it. I love it. I love it. Oh my God, that was great. Johnny, that we're going out with that, man.
It sounds good. I like any place that sells me a nice couch and is a fan of wordplay, so yeah.
Oh, all right, man. Have a great night, buddy.
You too, Bill. See ya.
All right. Bye.